11. The station manager's house was set apart from the rest of the buildings. It did not look like them at all. Once, it had been an old home in New England. The manager had noticed it during one of his business trips to the United States. He purchased it and had it shipped piece by piece all the way across the world, by boat, by pack train, across mountains, finally assembled by workmen at the station. Now it stood, an old-fashioned American colonial house, trim and white, its austere front rising up like some pale frosted cake, among refining plants and towering factory units and heaps of slag. Around the house was a lawn and a border of flowers. At the edge of the lawn was a white picket fence and a tiny gate. Three trees, birch trees, grew at the side of the house. Under one was a bench, a plain wood bench. Carl and Vern and Barbara stood at the fence, all of them a little awed.
"Just think," Carl said. "We can open the gate and walk across the lawn and go inside the house."
"If we can get the boards off," Vern said. He fingered the crowbar.
"Let's go," Carl said. "I'm anxious to get inside."
He pushed the gate open. "Don't be in so much of a hurry."
"I can't help it."
Carl waited for them to catch up with him.
"Just think, we could move in here if we wanted to. We could move right in, live here for a whole week, until they come. We could use his things, his kitchen, his chairs, his bed."
"All right," Barbara said. Suddenly, Carl stopped.
"What's the matter?"
Carl looked around.
"Maybe..."
"Maybe what?"
"You know, maybe this isn't such a good idea."
"Why not?"
"Well, maybe we shouldn't break in this way. I don't think we're supposed to. That's why they boarded it all up."
"It was your idea."
"I know."
Carl hung his head. "But now that we're actually going to do it, I'm not sure how I feel."
"Come on,"
Barbara said impatiently.
"I'm kind of curious myself. I'd like to see how he lived. We heard so many different things."
Carl hesitated.
"Should we do it?"
"Why not?"
"I don't know. I guess I'm just letting my conditioned responses get the better of me. But it's like breaking into a church, where you're not supposed to be.
Like soldiers, the German army during the war, breaking in and sleeping in front of the altar, stealing things, breaking and tramping around."
"The manager was no god of mine," Vern said. They had come to the porch. Vern walked up the wide steps and tapped with the end of the crowbar on the boards that were nailed across the door. "This is going to be hard."
"Then we're really going in?" Carl asked. "I never realized how well I'd learned all the company rules and taboos. I thought with everyone leaving..."
"They hang on," Vern said. "Old superstitions."
He took Carl by the arm and turned him around.
"Look, do you see all that?"
Carl was facing the great domain that was the land and property of the station. It lay stretched out before them, all the way to the foot of the mountains.
"See all that? Miles and miles of buildings and machinery. Slag piles, pits, quarries. All deserted. No one there. No one at all. The buildings are empty. The factories. The miles of pits and excavations. You and I can do anything we want. We can go inside and wee-wee all over the floor, if we want. Rules and mores don't mean a thing anymore. There's no one here but us."
"There's nobody here to stop us," Barbara said.
"There was nobody to stop the German soldiers. That was the whole point. They could do what they wanted."
"But what does it matter?" Vern said. "The rules and codes were artificial. They were good only as long as they could be enforced. Now there's no one to enforce them, so they don't have any meaning. They were just conventions. Don't confuse them with innate moral laws. They were just rules, nothing more, man-made. They came, now they're gone again. The yucks will have their own rules."
"I suppose so."
"Well, forget about it. This is all your idea in the first place."
Vern hooked the crowbar behind the top board and began to pull.
"Here we go.
Let me give you a hand."
The two pulled together. After a while, they had the boards off the door and stacked up on the porch railing.
"Now,"
Vern said, pausing for breath, "here comes the real question." He tried the door handle.
"Locked."
"That's bad," Carl said.
"We'll try the back. If it's locked, we'll break it down."
They went down the steps and around the side of the house. Along the path grew flowers and vegetables, plants of all kinds and descriptions, an amazing hodgepodge that stretched out in all directions. There were pansies, begonias, tulips, watermelon, carrots, and rhubarb, and orchids, all mixed in together without any order, planted wherever there seemed to be any space.
"How eclectic," Carl said.
It's a mess, Barbara murmured. Look at them all growing together like that.
They came to the back door. Vern and Carl tore the boards loose and stacked them up. Here goes, Vern said. He tried the knob. The door was unlocked. He disappeared inside. Carl turned to Barbara.
After you. Thanks.
She went on in, Carl following excitedly behind. They were on the back porch where the laundry tubs were. Vern was not in sight.
Where are you?
Carl called.
I'm in here.
Vern was in the kitchen. Barbara and Carl came after him and stopped short in amazement.
Good Lord,
Carl said. The kitchen was filled with cooking equipment of all kinds. There was almost no space to walk. In one corner, an immense, gleaming stove jutted up from beside a refrigerator. Piled up on tables and on the floor were mixers, blenders, a waffle iron, an automatic toaster, countless white and silver shapes of all sizes and uses.
A lot of this stuff hasn't even been opened, Vern said. It's still crated up.
Along one side of the kitchen were packing crates and boards and nails and mounds of Excelsior, wrapping paper and wire and heavy cord. Carl picked up an object of chromium and steel, with an electric cord hanging from it.
What's this?
Barbara looked at the label.
It's an electric egg dicer.
Vern kicked at one of the crates.
God knows what might be in here. More egg dicers?
Probably a lot of different things.
They left the kitchen and found themselves in the dining room. In the center of the room was a heavy oak table, covered with a fine spun cloth. To one side was a cabinet with glass doors, mounted against the wall. Barbara opened one of the doors.
Look at these.
Vern came over and stood beside her. The cabinet was filled with dishes, old dishes, their edges encrusted with gold like spider webs. Barbara brought out a crystal bottle and stopper, holding it up to the light.
These must be worth $1 million,
she said. Hardly. Vern took one of the plates down and turned it around.
Early American. It's worth something. Maybe not that much, but a lot.
He replaced the plate. Carl came to the door.
Come in here.
What is it?
Carl disappeared through a door. Vern shrugged. Barbara closed the cabinet and they followed after Carl. They found themselves in the library. Carl was gaping up and around him, his mouth open.
Look, he said. Do you see?
Vern rubbed his jaw.
Could he read them all?
Could anybody read them all?
Barbara said. Books ran along the walls of the library, around them on all sides, up over their heads, higher and higher, as far as the eye could see. It made them dizzy to look up. The ceiling seemed hazy and indistinct, and a long way off. Vern reached up and plucked a volume at random from the shelf above his head. He handed it to Carl.
Look at it, he murmured.
Carl opened the book. It was incredibly ancient. A medieval illuminated manuscript, the vellum yellow and cracking. He turned it around. It was heavy.
Here, too,
Vern murmured. There were more crates, big wood packing crates, bound with wire twisted into knots. Wisps of straw stuck out at the ends of the crates. Some had been partly opened. Books were packed inside, brand new books that had never been taken out of their packing.
We get all this,
Carl said, dazed.
Not exactly. We get to use this for a while, but not more than a little while, a week maybe, very little.
We won't get very many of these read in a week,
Barbara said. Carl pulled some more books down and opened them. He put them back and gazed up. Some trick of the colors made the walls seem to fall back, farther and farther, the higher he looked. The number of books seemed to be growing, increasing as he watched, as if he were looking down the wrong end of the telescope. Faster and faster the walls of books fell away from him, until it seemed as if all the books in the world, each volume and pamphlet, each novel, each collection of stories, essay, study, everything man had put down on paper were collected here in this old-fashioned New England house in one room.
It makes me dizzy, Barbara said. How do you get up to the top?
Some sort of ladder. Vern wandered out of the room. Carl and Barbara followed him.
What's all this?
Carl asked. They had come into a workshop of some kind, filled with objects, machinery, and models of some kind, specimens, exhibits, displays.
A television set,
Barbara said. There were specimens of the phonograph, the telephone, rows of electric lights through all their stages of development, a power-driven saw, even a flush toilet. Most of the objects were piled helter-skelter on top of each other, stacked here and there without order or design. Some were still crated up, pushed off to one side, crammed together in packing boxes.
Inventions, Burns said. Looks like Menlo Park.
Dust was already beginning to settle over all the crates and exhibits. The three of them stood looking around glumly, none of them speaking for a time.
Just think, Carl said. They spent years bringing all this stuff here, and now it's abandoned. It's all left here, left behind, forgotten.
Maybe the yucks can use them.
Probably burn them, Vern murmured.
What a depressing sight, Carl said. It gives me the creeps. Imagine what the people who invented and made all these things would say if they could see them lying here, piled on top of each other, no order, no meaning, completely abandoned.
Barbara began to root through one of the heaps.
What are you looking for?
I don't know. Something I can use.
What do you want?
Barbara straightened up.
I have nothing in mind. There ought to be something here we can use. Look at it all. Tons of things. Every kind of thing.
Let's go, Carl said. He moved toward the door.
Don't you want to fill your pockets?
No. It reminds me of when I was a kid. I had a room full of things. Microscope, stamp album, maps, model steam engine. Like this. Everything strewn all around. There's something wrong with it.
Well, we can't take anything back with us, Vern said. These things don't really belong to us, but we could use them during the time we have left.
There's too many, too much stuff. Let's forget it. Let's just let it go. It's dusty in here.
It would make a nice bonfire, especially all the books. What a blaze.
We could tear out the last page of each book, Carl said. Think of the power we three have. We could tear out the last pages. We could tinker with all this stuff so none of it would work. Then the yucks would never be able to use anything or understand anything. They'd give up. They'd finally have to throw this all away. What power we have.
They'll probably throw it away anyhow, Vern said. This stuff doesn't mean anything anymore, except maybe as museum pieces. We have power over a lot of useless objects. They went back through the library, into the dining room, into the kitchen. In the kitchen, Vern halted. There's one thing I want to take a look at.
What's that?
His phonograph records. I might find something good. It's worth a try. Carl grinned.
So there's something that isn't just a museum piece.
I'm going outside, Barbara said. There's too much dust in here.
She touched one of the half-open crates.
Dust on them, and they're not even opened yet. The stuff is already decaying, and it's hardly been used.
Carl pushed the back door open.
Come on, let's go.
He stood by the door, and Barbara came toward him.
I'll see you later,
Vern said. He disappeared back into the dining room. Barbara and Carl stepped outside, down the back stairs onto the path. The air was warm and full of smells of flowers and grass. Carl took a deep breath.
Smells good.
Barbara bent down, examining a flower.
What's this?
Carl did not know.
Looks like some sort of rose, only it's so small.
Barbara picked the flower.
Well, what do we do? Where we go?
We could sit on the grass.
Barbara smiled.
Could we?
Don't you like to sit on the grass? When the sun's warm and the air's full of smells? I'm tired of running all over the place. I've done enough exploring.
You were so excited about the manager's house. Now you're not interested in it all.
I know. But there's something depressing about it. All those things, all those books and inventions and plates and egg dicers. Everything, stacks and crates and heaps, all strewn around, all abandoned. I'd rather be outside.
Barbara studied his face.
You change your mind fast.
And there was something about it.
I know,
Barbara said.
All right, let's sit on the grass in the sun. I guess it won't do any harm.
But is it wet?
Carl ran his hands through the grass.
Not anymore. It's all dried out.
They sat down gingerly, stiff-backed. The grass was warm and dry under them. Barbara sighed.
Oh, it makes me sleepy, the sun and the air.
How'd you sleep last night?
All right.
It was certainly quiet last night. I never realized how many sounds and noises there were around here. The people, the machinery, things coming and going, trucks. But last night there was nothing. Only silence. It gave me a strange feeling. It was so unnatural. After so many years of hearing things, it's hard to get used to this. I wonder if we will get used to it, ever. It's a big change for us. I wonder if this is one of those moments in history when people will look back years later and realize that the whole world hung in the balance. Civilization on trial, like the fall of Rome, or when they stopped the Turks at Vienna, or when the Moors came up into Spain. Roland. Remember Roland? How they stopped the Moors? Or Stalingrad, the end of Germany. History hanging in the balance.
He glanced at Barbara. Barbara was gazing up at the sky. A few faint trails of mist had come up and were blowing slowly along, white streamers mixed with the blue.
It's getting cooler,
Barbara said.
The fog.
We'll sleep better tonight.
Carl considered this proposition.
Do you suppose that if a person got less and less sleep each night, say he started with the full 8 hours, and then he slept just under 8 hours, then just a little less than that, that after a long enough time he could do without sleep completely? Somebody ought to experiment along those lines. It might turn out to be a major contribution to science.
I like to sleep,
Barbara said.
There's something to that, all right. We should never forget the positive value of sleep. You know, often we wish that things like death and sleep could be gotten rid of, but have you ever thought what it would be like to have to face the world all the time, not just 3/4 of the time, every hour of the day and night? During sleep, the whole system is rejuvenated, especially the brain. All the poisons that have accumulated during the waking hours are flushed out, carried off by the blood. And if there were no sleep, the peasants would have to work 24 hours a day instead of 12. And if there were no death, there would never be any escape for them.
I suppose,
Barbara said indifferently. She leaned back, stretching herself out on the grass, her eyes closed.
Is that comfortable?
Carl asked.
The sun's in my eyes. It looks all red.
That's the blood in the capillaries of your eyelids. The sun is shining through them.
Anyhow, it's a beautiful red.
Blood, fresh blood, is an amazing color. But as soon as it strikes the air, it darkens and looks unhealthy. On the other hand, blood that has been exhausted of air turns a dark purple. It's blood coming from the lungs that's so fresh and red-looking, blood in the veins.
Is that so?
I guess it's not very important. Can I lay back down with you?
If you want.
Carl lay back on the grass, resting his head on his arm, a short distance from Barbara.
You're interested in a lot of things,
Barbara said.
I guess I am.
In a way, I wish I had your enthusiasm. It's been a year since I read a whole book. I start reading, but I don't finish anything. I haven't done any real reading since I was in school. I used to read all the time then. Books and books, like the girl in the ad.
The ad?
The girl without a date in a room.
Oh, that girl.
But a friend tipped her off, and everything changed. Toothpaste, a mouthwash, a deodorant, or the right bra. I always thought that went a little more to the heart of things, the right bra. Those ads didn't mince around. The little profile ads on the back page of the newspaper.
Books aren't really so important, Carl said. I used to think so, but I don't anymore. I don't read as much as I used to. I'm getting out of the habit. For a while I was reading Proust. I read and read, but I never got through more than the first couple of books. I'd start a sentence, and by the time it finished, I'd have forgotten the beginning.
There was silence.
What part of the country do you come from?
Barbara murmured after a time.
Oh, we came originally from Denver. When I was about 3, we moved to California. My mother died while we were in California. I went to live with my grandparents. I moved around. I was living in St. Louis when I went to work for the company. They moved me from the domestic branch over here. I applied for overseas work when I signed up.
How long ago was that?
About 5 years ago. Good Lord, I've been working for the company 5 years.
How old were you when you started?
18, almost 19.
Why did you want to work for the company?
The draft, partly. I was tired of school. I'd been going to the university for a while. I wanted to get a job, and I wanted to get a job that would keep me out of military service. Sometimes I think I made a mistake, but at the time I really wanted to give up school and work.
Why?
Well, I'd been going to school so long. I was tired of being a schoolboy. I wanted to earn my own way, support myself, get out in the world.
Don't you miss school?
I'd already begun to lose faith in books.
That early?
I lost faith in my books and my microscope and slides and Bunsen burner, my maps and notes and papers.
Why?
Well, I was in a period of internal turmoil. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd been interested in a lot of things, but they never turned into anything that was important. They never seemed to get out of the hobby stage. I found myself in a world that was made up of quite different things than my slides and notes and books. There didn't seem to be any connection between all the things in my room and what I ran into outside.
Barbara sat up. She took out her cigarettes and lit up. Carl watched her, turning his head on one side.
How about you?
He said.
Me? Where did you come from?
Barbara laughed.
From Boston. I thought you had a New England accent. I was right.
It's not a New England accent. It's not anything. Damn it. Why do people always think they're so clever when they figure out where you come from?
I'm sorry.
Boston people talk completely differently from me.
I've never been in Boston. What's Boston like?
Like any other town, I suppose.
What do you remember about it?
Not much. A few impressions.
Barbara leaned back again, against the warm grass. She folded her arms, cigarette smoke drifting up.
When I think of Boston, I remember the Common. I remember that first.
The Boston Common?
It's like a park, a public park. When it was hot in the evenings, in the summertime, we used to go out and sleep on the grass, like this, warm and dry, with the sky full of endless stars.
Was that the kind of weather you had there?
Not all the time, she laughed. Sometimes we had the worst possible weather. One night I was walking home. I had a job as a waitress after school in a one-arm beanery near the campus. It was about midnight. All of a sudden it began to rain, great sheets of rain coming down, blowing along, trees bending, signs blown over. I started to run. I ran and ran until I came to the common, all dark and soggy. I ran right across it. Finally, I came to a wall of some sort. I hid under the edge of the wall, where the rain didn't come. Water was pouring down on all sides of me. Nobody was out, nothing but rain. I got out my cigarettes and my matches. I was just beginning to smoke. I lit every match, all 20, one after another. They were waterlogged, I guess. None of them lit. There was water dripping off me, my hair, my clothes, and no one around. Only the rain and the grass and the wall behind me.
That's what you remember about Boston?
Yes.
Did you ever get home?
Finally.
Carl considered.
Strange how things like that will stick in your mind. Bits and fragments from your past. Snatches, like tunes, phrases, a few words.
Barbara smiled.
Do you have a past, Carl?
He nodded.
How old are you? 23?
Yes. How did you know?
You were 18 when you began to work for the company. You said that was 5 years ago.
Oh.
Carl rubbed his chin.
What's the matter?
I wondered if I looked 23. Sometimes I think I look older. And then sometimes I'm sure I look just like some kid. When I go to shave in the morning, I always get a sort of a shock. I think I'll see a kid of 14 with long, shaggy hair and skin trouble.
Do you want to be 14 again?
No, I really don't. I'm glad it's behind me all those years, my boyhood.
You said you were interested in things then.
Yes, I had books and drawings and my microscope and my electric motor and the chemistry set. But there was a sort of unhealthiness about it. I was so much involved in things, running from one thing to another, like ants running around a hot stove, faster and faster. I had a whole room full of things, boxes and piles and heaps, a desk of things, every drawer stuffed full, maps on the walls, rows of books. I stayed home from school all the time to work on my things.
Was that so bad?
There was something unhealthy about it. Inside my room and outside, everything was different. Two worlds, my room full of things and the things outside.
Carl stared off into space, frowning.
It was hard for me to get across, over to the outside things. There was something about them that didn't make sense. At least the things in my room made sense. I knew what they were for, why they existed and did what they did. But the things outside.
What happened outside?
I remember one thing. There was an old cat, a worn-out old yellow tomcat that lived at the house behind us. All torn, ears cut, one eye missing, nothing left of his tail but the bone and a few patches of fur. He was old. Finally he got sick and lay out in the yard, their yard. The people who owned him never even went near him. He lay out in the long grass with the sagging porch swing and the beer bottles, with all the flies buzzing around him. I saw him out of the bathroom window, lying in the grass, gasping and dying. I went to the refrigerator and got some ground meat my mother was saving for supper. I took the meat out to him. The grass was long and wet. I remember how it felt under my feet, against my pants. It was hot, and the sun was bright. I sat down on a board in the grass and pushed the food toward the cat. I was about 9 years old, I think. I held out the food, but the cat was dead. For a long time, I sat looking down at him. His one good eye stared sightlessly up at me. Flies crawled all over his skinny body, over his skin and fur, into his mouth. I would have dug a hole and buried him, but I didn't think of it. A boy of 9 wouldn't know that. After a while, I went back inside the house and put the meat away.
They were silent. Barbara said nothing. A few birds came hopping across the lawn, past the garden of flowers, big dark birds, listening for worms. Carl watched them hopping by, cocking their heads, waiting, then going on. The birch trees by the side of the house swayed back and forth with the faint afternoon wind.
It's too bad when people don't take care of their pets, Barbara said presently.
Well, perhaps it was a good thing, at least for me. It had quite an effect on me. I never really got over it, seeing the cat there in the wet grass.
What kind of an effect?
It was the kind of thing that made me begin to lose interest in my hobbies, that made me see that something was wrong. I started moving away from all my hobbies and things. Once in a while, I wish I had them back. Once in a while, I find myself thinking about them. They've filled up so much of my life. I could have gone on, becoming a biologist, something to do with microscopes and slides. Perhaps I should have. I dream about it. I dream about some old bookstore with old adventure magazines piled up, or a stamp store with rare stamps still on the old covers. I saved stamps and magazines. I had heaps of dusty things.
Carl closed his eyes, putting his arm across his face to blot out the sun. He sighed.
It's nice, Barbara said.
Yes, it's very warm and comfortable, the grass and the sun, waiting for the new owners to come. Dozing and lying and waiting while the grass grows around us. It's growing right now while we're lying here, up and up, higher all the time.
Carl's voice trailed off.
Up around us, covering us.
Why do you say that?
As if we had all died. All of us that are still here, the few still left, stretched out calmly with our arms folded across our chests, waiting for the undertakers to come. That's them, the new owners, our undertakers, coming from over the hills. Soon we'll be able to hear the sound, the rumble of their hearses, the distant rumble coming closer and closer.
He yawned and became silent. Barbara turned her head, gazing at Carl lying beside her, stretched out on the grass, his arm over his eyes, his mouth open. He looked very young. His skin was pale and clear. He was big, 6 feet probably, a lot bigger than most men she had known. But Carl wasn't a man. He was still a boy thinking about his microscope and stamps and books. But someday he would begin to get old, too. He would dry up and wither away like everyone else. What he said was true. They would all die, and their remains would be turned under the ground, under the damp ground, under the grass, where the sun didn't shine at all, where it was cold and dark and things moved around, blind things reaching and feeling, cold, clammy things that touched and felt, that oozed along. Barbara sat up. Sweat trickled down the back of her neck. It was hot, a bright, hot day. She took a deep breath of the fresh air. It smelled good. It smelled of all the flowers and the birch trees and the drying grass around them. She gazed down at the boy. He had taken his arm from his face. His heavy blonde hair glistened in the sun. How smooth his skin was, even his chin and neck. Did he really shave? Probably not very often. Barbara watched him for a long time without moving. He was big and young, very young, still thinking about his childhood. He was like the day, like the sunlight and the trees and the garden of flowers. He was blonde and glistening and full of life. She could see perspiration glowing on his neck, above his shirt. It was warm from the sun. She was warm, too. She rubbed her arms, yawning sleepily. Carl opened his eyes.
This is Mark Twain weather, he said. Along the Mississippi, catfish and rafts.
His eyes were blue, warm, friendly blue.
Makes you want to sleep,
Then sleep?
No. She drew back suddenly, away from him. No thanks. For some reason, she had thought of Vern and the sagging cot in her room, the covers, the clothes, Vern and the cup of lukewarm whiskey. I slept enough in my time.
You know, if a person computed the total hours spent in sleeping during his lifetime...
We already discussed that once today.
That's so. I guess we did. Sorry.
Barbara nodded.
It's interesting, though, Carl said presently. Interesting to think about. Sleep involves time. Time is the fundamental problem of philosophy.
He waited hopefully, but Barbara said nothing. She had lit a second cigarette and was staring down at it, deep in meditation.
What?
She said abruptly.
I was just talking about time.
Oh.
What are you thinking about?
Nothing.
She shook her head.
Nothing at all. Go on with what you were saying.
I was just talking. You know, I've started an essay about this kind of thing. Time and change, death, growth. Trying to sum up what I think. A sort of treatise.
She nodded.
A summary of what I believe. A philosophical credo. I have it all wrapped up with brown paper and cord to make sure nothing happens to it.
Is it finished?
Almost. I have to get somebody to type it up for me. It's in longhand.
What are you going to do with it?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Are you going to try to have it published?
Well, I could get it published if I wanted. I know a woman that works for one of the big publishing places. But I don't think I'll do that.
Carl plucked vaguely at a stalk of grass.
I think I'll just keep it around to look at from time to time. It has no universal value. I may well be the only person who ever reads it.
Maybe you could show it to me sometime.
Carl brightened.
That's an interesting idea. I might read you parts of it. Not long parts, of course. A few sections here and there.
That would be nice.
Carl warmed up.
You wouldn't mind, would you? If it bored you, we could stop instantly. Most of it is pretty dull, but you might be interested in some parts. I'll go over it and pick out the interesting parts. What do you say? Do you mind listening to some of it?
I'd like to.
Barbara studied the boy thoughtfully. He was smiling at her, his eyes large and blue. Again she thought of him, standing timidly outside her door, standing in the hall, gathering himself together to knock. Trying to get up enough courage to do what he wanted to do. Twice he had done that. The first night, while she was putting all her things away, and then again, while she and Vern were in the room together. Both times he had come, the big, tall boy with his honest blue eyes, his blonde hair. Siegfried, the innocent youth, come to redeem and save. Carl's face was devoid of guile. His smile was warm and open, without secret meaning or intent. Now he wanted to read his essay to her. What did it mean? Anything beyond what he said it meant? No. Carl was as open and guileless as Christ himself. If it were anybody else asking her. But she could not imagine him telling a lie. She could not imagine the great blonde features screwed up into deceit.
Yes, I'd like to,
she said again.
Fine.
Barbara got slowly to her feet, putting out her cigarette.
Where are you going?
It's getting cold. I'm going in.
Is it?
Carl scrambled up.
You're going inside already?
Want to walk along?
Sure. You're not mad at me, are you?
Mad? Why should I be mad?
I don't know. Do you mind listening to my essay? If you do, just say so.
I don't mind.
I don't want to impose on you. For Christ's sake.
Carl shrank away, pain flushing across his face, like a struck child. She was sorry instantly. She put out her hand, touching him on the shoulder.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snarl. I've a lot on my mind, things to worry about.
He blinked hopefully, regaining some of his lost joy.
I guess I talk too much.
Barbara put her arm through his.
Let's go. Come along. We'll get burned if we stay out any longer.
That's right, Carl said. It's hard to tell about that. The wind blows over you and gives you the false notion that you're not directly in the path of the sun's rays. You don't feel it, but all the time...
He stopped, seeing that she wasn't listening. She was thinking again, far off in thought, frowning a little, as if a bug were buzzing around her head while she was trying to think. Carl became silent.
Where shall we go?
Barbara said suddenly.
Wherever you want.
Let's go fix some coffee.
All right.
You can read to me tomorrow. How would that be? If it's a nice day, we'll sit outside and read.
Fine, Carl beamed. It's much more fun to read out in the sunlight instead of inside. Reading inside has a kind of museum quality about it, stuffy, like dry dust.
Barbara walked across the grass, Carl following behind her. She felt vague annoyance. Why did he have to worry everything to death? On and on he went, shaking each subject until there wasn't anything left in it. But he was like a child, a big child that had never learned. She slowed down, waiting for him to catch up.
The hills look nice, Carl said.
Already he had forgotten. She sighed, like some big overgrown child.
Yes, they look fine.
They walked along together. Carl put his hands in his pockets, kicking at rocks ahead of him. Neither of them said anything. Carl gazed around at the trees and the sky and the distant hills.
If you find you don't enjoy it after we start, all you have to do is just say so and I'll stop. I have a lot of good ideas, but that doesn't mean much. Everybody has good ideas. That doesn't mean another person would be interested.
All right, Barbara said. If I change my mind, I'll tell you.
She smiled a little.
Are you satisfied?
I don't want to impose on you, Carl said.
He looked at her out of the corner of his eye. Barbara nodded.
I get that impression.